His arm hurt like hell, and the phone was ringing. Let them ring, the impatient sons of bitches. He'd be no good to anybody until he got rid of the pain. He put the compress back into the tin basin of hot water, wrung it out, and applied it again. The water was cooling down, and he debated whether to toss it out and start over or put some liniment on the arm. He decided against the liniment. It would stink, and they'd smell it and ask questions. In the earlier days, he could bathe in the stuff, and if he came in reeking, it wouldn't matter. But now they would take a whiff and give him sympathy and considerate glances. Then, behind his back, they'd lift their eyebrows and make bets on how soon a wild horse would break his neck. The phone stopped ringing, and he had only the ache to make him angry. He wondered if he should take a pill. No, he didn't dare. It would slow him down all afternoon, or worse, throw him off the rhythm of some bronc or other, and 100 feet across the arena, he'd be on his butt. Besides, the pill didn't do any good. He had taken one last night, and against doctor's orders, a second one. But instead of killing the pain, they had given him bad dreams. He'd have to find another doctor, somebody who'd give him a powerful injection, and presto, the pain would be gone. Tennis elbow, what a ridiculous label to put on an ache like this. Mike resented it. It sounded too fancy, too phony for a man like himself. It certainly gave no hint of this murderous torture from the shoulder to the fingertips and every muscle, nerve, bone. Yes, he'd have to see another doctor. But he dreaded that the new one might call it exactly what Mike suspected it to be, arthritis. And he didn't think he could stand that word. It meant middle age, and there was no such thing as a middle-aged rodeo star. The pangs were getting worse, sharp seizures now, clutching the whole arm, stabbing, paralyzing it. He opened the little box and looked at the tiny triangular yellow pills, but without taking one, shut the box again. That thing last night, that miserable, nameless thing. He knew the pills had done it because the search persisted until they wore off. 2 hours after he had gone to bed, he got up again and, strangely reluctant to turn the lights on, wandered around in the dark. There was something missing, whatever it was, something he suspected he had lost. He had rooted in the darkness at first as if an absence of light had nothing to do with finding anything. Then he turned the lights on, every blazing light in the apartment, and hunted everywhere. And as he became less certain what he was ferreting around for, he became more fixed on finding it. Finally, searching systematically, closet by closet, drawer by drawer, wondering who had robbed him of what, and how he might recover it, he realized he was dead tired. It was daylight when the urgency of the search diminished, and he knew he'd been doing a weird thing. He went to bed again, but couldn't sleep because the pain wouldn't stop. Now the phone was ringing again. He shouted at the clanging instrument, "Shut up! When did I ever miss a show? I'll be in and riding any wild cock horse you've got, and the crowds will get their guns off yelling, 'Milo, Mike Milo, quit it, I'm coming in.'" Where else would he spend the afternoon? Not here in the apartment, certainly. The place depressed him. He had furnished it all wrong. He had been in a nightmare when he did it. He was a zombie. When it was just completed, Donna had come visiting and, taking one look at the living room, had called it ruttishly masculine. From that time on, he was embarrassed by the steer horns on the wall, by the horseshoe bookends, the rodeo posters, the trophies in the glass case. Yet he never changed anything. It was like a penance for a period in his life he hadn't yet fully paid for.